I'm John Batchelor. Russia and China. No limits partnership. The Guardian gives us the headlines of events in these last hours. Xi Jinping welcomes dear friend, in quotes, Vladimir Putin to Beijing. Subhead, Russian president holds in-depth talks with Chinese leader on sidelines of trade forum. This is the Belt and Road Initiative Forum in Beijing. 130 countries participating, we're told. $1 trillion of investments by the People's Republic of China to develop Belt and Road, we're told. And Vladimir Putin leaving the Kremlin for the second time in a month. He was in Kyrgyzstan recently, that's Central Asia, to meet with the leaders of those countries. Now travels to Beijing. Far more important, however, is the war in the Middle East has broken out since these events, and the opinion of China and Russia are critical going forward. Right now, there's a balancing between the two. They're neither this nor that. Mr. Putin has made calls to the region, speaking to Prime Minister Netanyahu, to President Sisi of Egypt, to Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, and others in the region, Saudi Arabia, UAE. To my knowledge, Xi Jinping has not made phone calls, has not committed himself one way or the other. However, I welcome Joseph Sternberg, a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics. He's based in London. And anticipating what we're seeing now, a meeting of the two adversaries to the United States when it comes to the Russian Federation contest with NATO, and the two allies with unknown ambitions in East Asia in these next weeks. We come to them because Joe has identified not a U.S. policy failure, but an EU policy failure about Russia and China and the bad actors, the Hamas gangsters in the Middle East, and their kindred spirit in other organizations. I'm thinking of Hezbollah, a terrorist organization. I'm thinking of Tehran, an Islamic Republic terrorist organization. Joe, a very good evening to you. Russia, the EU had a plan. Starting in these many decades, the EU came together to develop trade between the states. It's proved successful for some of those states. The new members of the EU are struggling to join the bounty that is enjoyed by the original founding members. And the plan was that Russia would fit into the EU in some fashion. What was the thinking, Joe? How was Russia regarded before the conflict in Ukraine, which starts about 2014, not 2022? Good evening to you, Joe.
Hey, John. Well, I think the key point here is actually the economy, because we're broadly talking about, I mean, first with the Russian invasion of Ukraine last year, and then with the collapse or disarray of Europe's strategy regarding China, and now with the Hamas terror war directed at Israel that started a week and a half ago, you basically have an enormous challenge to the way that the European Union and individual European countries have attempted to do foreign policy. And the pathway that they always wanted to follow concerned the economy. The theory was that the EU has created a continent-wide economic bloc that would be the world's second largest economy behind the U.S. If it were a single country. It would have a population that would be about a third bigger than America's if all of the 27 EU member states were just one country instead of 27 different ones. And it is a common market right now. It is, in many regards, a single economy. And they had hoped that that would give them a lot of heft on the global stage, that the carrot of being able to trade to sell things into this European market would be a factor that would discipline bad actors in the neighborhood. The option of huge amounts of European investment into other countries would be a way of exporting European values, because values like rule of law or democracy would follow that investment, or even that Europe could use its own economic resources to build its influence by throwing money at problems through aid donations. And all three of those methods have fallen apart in spectacular fashion in the past 20 months. I mean, we saw that the offering Russia the opportunity to sell huge amounts of fossil fuels to Europe, which is how the Europeans really thought about this relationship, turns out to have been a big vulnerability for Europe instead of an opportunity for it to project influence on Russia. A transformation of China's economy and political system has not followed all of this European investment. Instead, a lot of European companies and governments find themselves very exposed. And now we discover that the huge amounts of aid money that the EU and European governments have sent to the Middle East over the years have not bought peace in Israel or the territories that are controlled by the Palestinian Authority.
The trade then was to be the way to knit together Russian tradition and European tradition, Russian culture and European culture. Was it any more sophisticated than that, Joe? We give them money and they'll obey us. Was that the thinking?
Well, I think that part of the problem here has been that they have assumed that strategic or political relationships work in the same way that a trading relationship does. So if you're engaged in commerce with other people, you assume there is a certain baseline level of trust there, and also that fundamentally your interests are aligned. You both want to make money. And so that means that you might not agree or be looking out for each other's best interests, but at least you can kind of understand how the other guy might be looking at the world, because fundamentally you both want the same thing, which is to profit for yourselves. And I think that Europe's error on a lot of foreign policy issues, as has been exposed over the past year and a half, is that Europe often has to deal with counterparties who do not think like Europe does. I mean, Russia has aspirations that are very different from being a normal European country. Vladimir Putin seems to want to reconstitute a Russian empire. Xi Jinping in China has aspirations that are very different from wanting to be a European-style social market economy with a democratic government. He wants to keep the Communist Party in power. Various bad actors in the Middle East have interests that are different from wanting to live peaceably alongside Israel. They have ideological goals that tend toward the destruction of Israel or the murder of Jews. And I think that Europe's economics-oriented form of diplomacy has not really been alert to the dangers that come when you try to do economic diplomacy with people who fundamentally do not view the world the way you do.
Russia is isolated out of the EU for now. I understand that. China is not, however. And recently we discussed your column about China looking to be the EV go-to for Europe, and Europe is hesitating, actually considering tariffs in order to keep the EVs of China from flooding Europe. But at no point has anybody talked about freezing China out. So right now, the EU would appear to be following the same idea. If we stay trading with China, we'll liberalize it, modernize it, soften it in some fashion, and we can wean it away from its alliance with Russia. Is that the thinking, Joe?
Well, the electric vehicle thing and the car market in general is such an interesting example, because that to me actually shows how the old European way of thinking is totally falling apart on them, and they don't know what to do about it. I think that there is now a dawning realization in a lot of parts of Europe that China actually is a strategic rival or competitor instead of a potential friend or ally. And you could ask what took them so long to reach that conclusion, but they're there now. And yet they discover that because of the legacy of all of the economic diplomacy that they were trying to do for such a long time, they've developed these dependencies. Particularly, they are going to be dependent on imports of electric vehicles from China if Europe wants to meet its own electric vehicle mandates over the coming decade. And they're not ready for the situation that they've put themselves in. So I think that that is actually an example of how they've kind of reached the big realization about the dangers to this relationship, but they're still struggling to internalize what that's going to require of them in terms of policy changes at home.
And the Middle East, you say quite correctly that the Europeans collectively and individually, have poured enormous resources, NGOs, and passion into the Middle East, especially to the Palestinians, for decades now, decades. However, right now what they're dealing with is a failure of all the money that they threw at the Palestinian Authority. Do they see it, Joe? Or is this going to be regarded as the consequence of bad actors and the majority of people, and then name the majority of people who want peace?
I think they might end up seeing it. I am going to be cautiously optimistic about this. I think that the Hamas invasion of Israel has had much the same effect on Europe that the Russian invasion of Ukraine had, in that it is a shock to the system that such a thing could happen at all. And then the sheer brutality of the attack, I think, has shocked Europeans into recognizing that the people who perpetrated it are not the kind of people or organizations that Europeans might have wanted to pretend that they were before. So I think that the shock is very real. The European Union is certainly in the middle now of conducting a review of its aid donations to the Palestinian Authority, and the way that it spends money in the Middle East to make sure that that is appropriate now. And I take them at their word for now that they are serious about conducting that review. But I think the problem for them is that if they aren't going to do this money or economics-based diplomacy, they are going to have to think about what Europe's role in the world will look like, whether there is a military dimension to that, and what kind of resources that requires. And they've started that discussion in connection with NATO and Russia, but I'm not sure that they're ready to have that kind of discussion yet for the rest of the world.
We're told that Olaf Scholz, the chancellor of all of the Germans, is headed to Jerusalem sometime in these next days. We know President Biden is planning to be in Jerusalem at the invitation of Prime Minister Netanyahu in the next 24 hours. But I'm focusing on Olaf Scholz, leader of the Germans, as representative of all of Europe, which has a special historical burden that it must deal with all the time when dealing with Jewish persons. And that is the Holocaust and the abuse of the displaced persons following the Holocaust, following the end of the war in 1945. Now, that would seem to suggest that they have a burden to bear in correcting having committed so many resources to murderers, to cutthroats. Are they going to bear that burden, Joe? Are they going to reverse their attitude towards Israel and understand that Israel was created in flight from European bad actors?
Well, I think the Germans certainly do understand that. And the formula for many years has been that one of the reasons that the present German state exists is to guarantee the protection of Israel. And so I think that Germany's political class is very aware of the historical responsibility that they in relationship that they have toward and with Israel, and would be very determined to fulfill that role, because they do understand the historical burden that they bear in this instance. I think the problem is that they are still kind of in denial about what that role actually requires of them. And the big argument that's going on in Germany right now is their shock at discovering that there now live within Germany many young people, and particularly many immigrants who have arrived from the Middle East within the past few years, who do not share German values on issues such as the importance of combating anti-Semitism, and in fact, who have been openly anti-Semitic in protests surrounding events of the past week and a half in Israel, and in the approach of some of these people in German society to those events, and also in terms of some people harassing Jews on the streets of Germany again, which I think is very shocking to a lot of Germans because of their history and their awareness of the danger. They are going to have to grapple with the fact that solidarity with Israel is going to involve better enforcing these cultural norms and sense of history within Germany, and making sure that Germany remains a country that is aware of and capable of fulfilling these responsibilities.
Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, he writes the political economics column. He's based in London. When we come back, life in London in wartime. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.